This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Mark Haney. Coming up later, we'll look at how the design process can be used to address social problems. But first, throughout history, we have looked up to the skies to keep time, mark calendars, find our way, and develop our myths and legends and religions. We've visited the moon and sent probes to Mars. Well, if you enjoy learning about the stars, planets, and other celestial bodies, you're going to be happy today. In luck, Cincinnati is known as the birthplace of American astronomy, and Greater Cincinnati is now home to three observatories. Joining us to discuss exploring the night sky are chair of the Northern Kentucky University Physics, Geology, and Engineering Department and manager of the recently opened NKU Schneider Observatory, Dr. Michael Roth. Thomas More College Assistant Professor of Math and Physics, Dr. Wes Ryle, who manages the BB&T Observatory at TMC, and Cincinnati Observatory Assistant Director and Outreach Astronomer and co-host of the popular PBS series Stargazers, Dean Regas. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. Email us talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Hello, nice to be here.
Pleasure to have you all here today. What should we be looking for tonight? Dean, why don't you start us out?
Oh, well, tonight we're in a place where we're in a planet drought right now. There are no planets up in the sky, and we're not going to even have the moon up in the sky. So lots and lots of stars. But last night it was so clear we could see lots of star clusters, like the Seven Sisters are back in the sky now. The Orion will be coming shortly, so we're looking forward to just looking at some stars. The real show is in the morning sky right now. Mm-hmm. And so early birds that wake up, I know you wake up pretty early. Before sunrise, you can see Jupiter, Venus, and Mars. And they are really amazing to see. People have been calling us about this all month.
So why are they in the morning and not at night?
Well, it's how they go around the sun. So that's they're all the planets are going around the sun while we are, and our perspectives change. So Venus is the most famous one that switches from the morning sky to the evening sky. So it's the morning star right now is what we call it. Unbelievably bright. It's suspiciously bright. It looks like a UFO in the sky right now. That's what it looks like.
Any other suggestions from you folks?
Coming up pretty soon, there's going to be the Leonid meteor shower. And so that'll be like November 17th, November 18th. And so that'll be another event more for early risers than for evening folks. And so if you go outside, don't need any kind of special equipment or anything like that. Just kind of get a nice comfy seat and stare at the sky, and you'll be able to see some shooting stars streaking across the sky.
Michael?
Yeah, I wake up about 4 a.m., hit the road about 4:30, and so I would encourage people to get out there in the morning. It is gorgeous with the planets and the other objects out there.
How do they even begin to know what to look for? I mean, Venus is bright. I always say, I think that's Venus because it's really bright. But how do you even begin to know what to look for?
Well, one thing, planets shine by reflected light, so they have a distinctive non-twinkling. Mm-hmm. That's one way you can recognize them and how they were recognized a long time ago. And then also they got their name because they were the wanderers. So night to night or morning to morning against the background stars, they change position. So you can kind of tell if you watch it from day to day, you can tell things change.
Yeah, and really the brightest things, that's what you usually go for, the order of things. So moon, of course, is awesome. And then Venus would be second brightest, Jupiter third brightest. And you can just really getting a foothold in the sky first. You identify a few things and then you get more comfortable with it. You start seeing patterns a little more often.
All right. With our students at Thomas More, one of the things I do with the astronomy students is to take them outside and give them a sky map. All right. If you do a Google search for sky maps, it'll print out, you can print out a sky map. And it looks intimidating at first, but if you use things that are easily recognizable, like Orion, like the Summer Triangle, like the Big Dipper, like Dean said, once you have those initial signposts, it's very easy to actually start to navigate your way around the sky.
Well, you're talking so much now about just looking at things with a naked eye, just walking outside and taking a look. But gosh, we have all of these observatories, and I'm not sure everyone knows. I mean, Dean, you've certainly talked about Cincinnati Observatory, and we're aware of that as well. But tell us what we have at Thomas More and at NKU, and we'll start with you, Wes.
So at Thomas More, we have the BB&T Observatory. We have four permanently mounted telescopes there. It's right on campus, and so if you know where Thomas More's campus there is in Crestview Hills, then you know where the observatory is. The nice thing about having those four permanently mounted telescopes is that when we have public nights, right, when the public can come up and view, there's four different telescopes on four different objects. It's a lot easier to rotate people around, and it gives you a little bit of variety of what you can see in the sky, planets, the moon, stars.
Michael?
So we have the newly built Schneider Observatory on top of our Founders Hall. We have several 8-inch Cassegrain reflector telescopes and then 11 and 14-inch telescopes as well for different purposes.
And is that open to the public as well?
It is. What we do is when people express interest in tours or just seeing the facilities, I contact the astronomy contingent in the department, make sure that the tours can mesh with their schedules, and then we're happy to accommodate that.
And Dean, when are you folks available for people to visit?
Yeah, the Cincinnati Observatory is open every Thursday and Friday to the public. People just have to call in advance. And then we have special events throughout the year. So this Saturday, in honor of the Leonid meteor shower that Wes was talking about, we have an event called Meet a Meteorite, where we're going to have meteorites on display. We have hundreds of space rocks from all around the world that people can see and touch. And so that's Saturday night from 7 to 10. As far as our equipment goes, we have, our newest telescope was made in 1904. So it's slightly older than your guys'. It's a 16-inch diameter refractor telescope with about 22-foot-long tube on it. And that's our new one. The older one was made in 1843 in Munich, Germany. It's one of the oldest in the world. And,
well, it's interesting. Compare what you see in those. Are you going to see things differently in an old telescope versus a new telescope, or is it just telescopes?
It's pretty much the same.
Right.
So our old telescope, when I go visit over at Wes's place, their views are almost exactly the same as through our old telescope, which is in one way cool that this old equipment was so advanced that it was so well made that it still holds up today. But then on the other hand, you can get telescopes much cheaper now than you could back then. And so individuals can actually own telescopes of the same power.
Yeah, the main thing that kind of determines what a telescope can view is the size of the mirror or the size of the lens. And so in that regards, all our observatories are pretty similar. But the Cincinnati Observatory definitely takes the cake as far as kind of historical implications.
Our phone number, if you have a question or a comment, is 513-419-7100. Gene's calling from downtown. Hi, Gene. What's your question?
How you guys doing this afternoon?
Just fine. How are you?
Pretty good. I just had a question. I recently saw a picture of the Milky Way and the Northern Lights simultaneously, and obviously not going to be able to see the Northern Lights, but I wonder if there was a area close locally where you could get a good view of the Milky Way that was dark enough to maybe actually start to see some stuff.
Well, the Cincinnati Observatory members go is called Stone Lick State Park. And so it's about 30 miles east of Cincinnati. That is about the closest place that you can kind of see the Milky Way. You can see it kind of across the sky as this kind of little cloud. And we recommend there because, number one, we're allowed to be there, so that's good. It's safe. Yeah. And you can go there where there'll be lots of telescopes set up. And so this Saturday night is a Stone Lick night out at that park, and it's free and open to the public. And you can see a variety of telescopes. They'll be there if it's clear.
Gene, any other questions?
No, that's it. It's something I want to cross off my list. I've been lucky enough this past year to see some stuff I've never seen up until last year. Just recently, I've never seen the moon through a telescope. That in and of itself blew my mind. So seeing some other stuff, I'm really looking forward to trying to pick out some other stuff.
All right, well, have fun looking up. Thank you, Gene. We appreciate the call. Megan's calling from Mount Lookout. Hi, Megan. What's your question?
Hi. I was just curious for the individual observer, if you recommend a particular telescope or place to go to purchase one at an affordable price.
What's affordable on a telescope? I mean, what should you? That's
good
an interesting question.
Yes.
I mean,
when people usually ask me this question, and you get this question a lot, the type of telescope that I recommend for people to buy is actually called a Dobsonian.
Can you spell that?
Dobsonian. So okay. Dobsonian. And it's a really simple design. I mean, really, it's just a tube and a mirror is really all it is. And because it's such a simple design, that means you can get the biggest mirror for your dollars. And so we just bought one so that we could take it out to schools and libraries and things like that, a 10-inch Dobsonian. And it was only $800. And actually, the price was a little bit higher just because it had some bells and whistles on it. If you got a simpler model, you can get down in the $500, $600 range for a 10-inch telescope that's comparable in size to the ones that we have at our observatory. And so that's the one that I usually recommend.
Now, Megan, does that sound affordable to you? I don't know if that's what you're...
Well, this is a Christmas gift that all the children will give our parents because they're avid watchers with the naked eye. But that would be something more along the lines of $200 or $300. So I don't even know if there's
anything
worth
available at that
out there.
Yeah, unfortunately, it is tough. There's no such thing as a good $100 telescope. Mm-hmm. So there are some decent between $200 and $300 range. They're the same style that Wes was talking about. Dobsonians, also smaller, compact ones. There are a couple places you can purchase them in town. There's I1, which is a eyeglass place in Hyde Park Square, and then the Cincinnati Observatory, we sell telescopes too. Mm-hmm. That's about the only two places in town. The rest you can buy online. Any of us, if you look us up, you can always ask us questions about what's the right telescope mm-hmm. to buy. Lots of options.
Well, Megan, I hope that helps a little.
Yes, a lot. Thank
all
you.
Right. Thank you so much. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our phone number, if you have a question or a comment about your night sky or astronomy, you want to give us a call at 513-419-7100. Felicia's calling from Dayton. Hi, Felicia. What's your question?
Hi. I'm so excited because it's not a question. It's really a comment to let you know. For down here in Dayton at the Boonshot Museum, we have a Dayton astronomers who's down there and allow the students to come down on Fridays and Saturdays or different days, which is absolutely free. And that was what's most memorable for my students and my children. So I'm really excited. I think we'll come down Saturday to join you all down there. But thank you so much.
Oh, that's great. Thanks yeah. for hearing that. And we get that so often because there still is this power of the field trip that we want to really encourage, that schools have kind of gotten away from going on field trips as much. And there's so many people that, you know, it might just be one experience at a planetarium or at an observatory, but it really sticks with them. And so we want to definitely encourage that. And I know these guys are doing this too, and having some great crowds come over to see their planetarium at NKU.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's a really great facility there.
Yeah, in fact, our Hale Digital Planetarium is offering some shows, Stars Around the World, basically talking about cultural perspectives of constellations. And in fact, we're partnering with our performing arts department, so we have actors coming in and reading the parts and playing the parts of maybe, you know, scientists, their lives and their times, or culturally relevant individuals. And it's really a cool experience. And, you know, I am a firm supporter of and believer in that type of outreach, you know, the field trips, experiences for young people.
Felicia, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate it. Again, our number, if you have a question or a comment, is 513-419-7100. We're talking about astronomy at our local observatories, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. We'll continue our discussion in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We're discussing Greater Cincinnati's three observatories and exploring the night sky. With us today, our chair of the Northern Kentucky University Physics, Geology, and Engineering Department and manager of the recently opened NKU Schneider Observatory, Dr. Michael Roth. Thomas More College Assistant Professor of Math and Physics, Dr. Wes Ryle. He manages the BB&T Observatory at TMC, and Cincinnati Observatory Assistant Director and Outreach Astronomer and co-host of the popular PBS series Stargazers, Dean Regas. You can call 513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Email us, talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We did get a call from Jackie who wants to know, are any of the observatories equipped to be accessible for those with disabilities in wheelchairs?
Yes, on ours, we have
NKU.
At NKU, we have an elevator that takes people right up to there. And then there's the elevator, and then there's a ramp, and so it's accessible.
Good.
And the TMC Observatory also has a walkway or ramp up to the observatory. One of the things that we're working on is to buy some equipment that would allow us to hook up a camera directly to the eyepiece so that you can actually have a live feed of what's coming through the telescope. Because even if you can get to the telescope, sometimes it's actually hard mm-hmm. to get to the eyepieces as well.
Oh, cool. So mm-hmm. then, so you do have a hookup there. What mm-hmm. about, you guys are close to the Informatics Center there at NKU. Do you have any hookup with that and their big screens or anything like that, or not at this time?
Not right now, but that's in process, because what we want to get to is where students can do research at the observatory and do some things possibly remotely. And so we're looking at camera purchases, CCD devices, things like that.
Dean, what about your observatory? It's old.
Yes, the Cincinnati Observatory, the buildings were built in 1873 and 1904, so they're not they're handicapped accessible to the first floor. We have ramps and an elevator. But getting up to the telescopes themselves, unfortunately, not currently, because the layout of the building is a little unique, that's for sure. And so there's 6 steps into one of the rooms and 26 into the other rooms. But we're working on cameras also. There's these eyepieces that can mm-hmm. you can put on portable telescopes outside that we can use with folks that can't make it up the steps. So there's still lots of options. And then attaching a camera is really getting pretty cool that you can do this and beam it into classrooms. You can send it all over the place. It's from the telescope right to there.
Technology is an amazing thing. Our phone number is 513-419-7100. If you have a question or a comment, Chris is calling. Hi, Chris. What's your question?
Yeah, I just want to make a comment that in addition to the three observatories that we have, we also have the Cincinnati Astronomical Society, which is an amateur group. I'm actually on the board, and we've got 4 telescopes on site and dark sky sites, too. So I wanted to mention that in case anybody was thinking about joining.
Tell me where you're located.
We're off Zion Road in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so people
in Cleves,
and so people can join and take part in.
Oh yeah, the Cincinnati Astronomical Society—they've been around for over 100 years, and they have really top-notch telescopes there too, and they're open to the public regularly. We have a lot of our members from the Cincinnati Observatory and the Astronomical Society are members of both, and it's a great organization. I'm glad he called in to tell us about that.
Thanks so much, Chris. We appreciate it. Our phone number is 513-419-7100. Nick's calling from Cincinnati. Hi, Nick. What's your question?
Hi. How you doing today, guys?
Just fine. How are you?
Excellent. I was going to ask, I live near the city, and so there's a lot of light pollution, so I can't really see much of the night sky from my back patio, but I was wondering if there's anywhere within about maybe 2 hours I could drive to and get a better view just with the naked eye.
Dean was mentioning Stone Lake earlier. Really, you know, you only need to go probably about a half an hour outside the city in order to be able to get a good view. You know, and the other key is that it's best if you're not headed directly towards another city. Because obviously if you, like, go from Cincinnati to Dayton, you're going to have light from both if you try to go along that route. But anywhere kind of a half an hour away, 40 minutes away, you're actually going to be able to get a pretty nice view of the night sky as long as you get away from those city lights.
What if somebody really wants to make a vacation of it and really take that trip for the darkest sky? Where in the continental U.S. can you find the darkest sky?
My vote closest is Upper Peninsula, Michigan, mm-hmm. which isn't that close, but it's still pretty awesome up there. It's really dark sky there.
I like your vote. You know what I would say, too, is if you can go somewhere west of the dry line, maybe where it's a little less humid, so like New Mexico also, so mm-hmm. maybe those two places.
Right. Yeah, the American Southwest, I did a lot of my graduate work in Lowell Observatory in Flagstaff, Arizona, and just absolutely beautiful skies. If you go anywhere out in the Southwest, like you said, those dry conditions just make the sky that much more beautiful.
Well, if you're going to go that far, why don't we go to the big island of Hawaii on the top of the mountain?
There you go.
There you go.
All right. Well, Nick, I hope that gives you some ideas.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for your call. Again, our number is 513-419-7100. If you have any questions about astronomy, the night sky, telescopes, Mike's calling from Wilmington. Hi, Mike. What's your question?
My question. Thank you for taking my call. My question regards the Northern Lights. Is there any place, including the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, where I might go to see the Northern Lights on a predictable basis?
The short answer is no. Well, you said a predictable basis. That's the problem, unfortunately, Mike. It's hard to predict when we're going to have Northern Lights. I've seen the Northern Lights in Cincinnati twice in my lifetime, but the other times are farther north. So the farther north you go, the more likelihood you have of it. So Upper Peninsula, Michigan's good, northern Minnesota, Alaska, Canada. The farther north, the more likelihood you have of it, but it still doesn't guarantee. Like, I went to northern Minnesota in winter because I thought, okay, I'm going to see this. And I didn't see one thing. And then in summertime, I was in Alberta and just happened to see them there, too. So you never know.
That's what they call it, space weather, for a reason, because just like regular weather, it's pretty hard to predict. Yeah.
Well, Mike, I hope that helps.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Again, our number, if you have a question or a comment, is 513-419-7100. You also can email your questions to talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Jim emailed, and he said, if you have a child interested in science, take him or her to an observatory because being able to see the actual planets is exciting. How would you suggest parents start to introduce their children to really looking at more than just, you know, good night, moon?
That's a good question. I think it's something you can take them outside with first. Look in the naked eye. Make it a kind of a family event. You're outside. You're enjoying things. And we've had these moon events at the observatory where we're not even using the telescopes. We're sitting on the lawns watching a moon rise. And it's really powerful, even without a telescope, that you just take the time to get away from the TV, get away from the computer, and be outside a little bit. I think that's step number one. And then two, then putting your eye up to the telescope. Like somebody, one of the callers said they just saw the moon for the first time this year. And that, put that on your list, to see the moon, to see Saturn, to see Jupiter in a telescope. And it will change your life. I don't know if these guys, that happened to you guys.
Oh, yeah. Well, when I was 12, 13, 14, I lived in Cheyenne, Wyoming. So clear air.
Oh, wow.
So the spring and the fall, the temperate seasons were great. So I had a telescope out in the front yard. Friends would come over, you know, and have a look. And there's something about it. You know, you can see the pictures from Voyager and, you know, nowadays Hubble and, and things like that. But when you see that small planet hanging in your eyepiece with a ring around it, there's nothing like it. So I would emphasize that show them the real thing. It's gorgeous, and they get captivated.
Well, yeah. tell us how different the moon is. I mean, and I've seen it, but you guys can describe it much better than I can. The difference between looking at the moon and then looking at the moon through a telescope.
And if you view the moon particularly around first quarter phase, because when you look at the moon when it's full, a lot of people think, well, I want to go look at the moon through a telescope when it's full. One, it's really bright, and so it almost hurts your eyes if you don't have the proper filters in there. But it also removes the contrast, right? When you're looking at a quarter moon, you're kind of seeing the edge of the moon that's just going into sunrise, and it's like kind of the sunrise-sunset boundary. And so you get a lot of deep shadows, and you get to see details of the mountain peaks, the edges of the craters on the moon. You get to see features that you normally wouldn't, right? One, with the naked eye, and two, when it's a full moon. And so it's that contrast that you see with a telescope that really brings kind of that wow factor.
Is it tricky if you have your own to really figure out what you're looking at? I remember my parents always trying to show me, you know, this is the Little Big Dipper, this is the Little Dipper. Oh, the Little Dipper is always trickier to find. I was like, I still struggle with that. And how do you help kids really pick that out of the sky so they can see it?
Well, you have to make it accessible to them. You have to make the constellations that they would recognize. That's the thing, because the ancient Greek constellations, the ones that we tell and teach about, are great, and the stories behind them are awesome. But we cannot compete with the Greek imagination. I cannot see Cassiopeia. I can't do it. We're not bored enough. That's the thing. And so you have
not
to make
bored enough. I like that.
You have to make better constellations for so urban constellations. The other caller said they couldn't see very many stars where they are. Well, you can make other ones out of the bright ones. There's still about 20 to 30 bright stars you can see in downtown Cincinnati. And so you just got to get a foothold. Make a constellation they can recognize, and then they can work around that. It's getting that first step. That was very intimidating at first, it seems like. But then once you get a first handhold in it, you start to roll and identify more things.
And I actually participated in the OKI Children's Literature Conference at Thomas More this past weekend, and I was talking about activities to get children interested in astronomy. And we were talking about constellations. Keep in mind, constellations don't really have any scientific meaning, and so make up your own, right? And so that's one of the activities that we talked about, is just to have kids go outside, make up their own constellations, and make up their own stories that go with them.
Kimberly's calling from Westwood. Hi, Kimberly. What's your question?
Hi. Well, comment. Previous caller asked where in the continental U.S. to go see fabulous night skies, and one place that you all neglected to mention was Yellowstone National Park. It is one of the most fabulous skies I have ever seen because there is no light pollution whatsoever, and you're also at high altitude.
Oh, that is a beautiful spot. I put another vote in for Crater Lake National Park. It's a very lightly visited park and very far away from city lights. It's a beautiful sky there, too.
What did you get to see at Yellowstone that was so wonderful, Kimberly?
Well, we spent a week there, and it was a number of years ago. But just so having spent a week, when you camp out at night, you know, that's all you see is the night sky. And it's just, I've never seen... you know, so many stars in all my life. And I know a previous caller, too, asked about the Milky Way, and it's just plain as day, you know, the Milky Way. It's just a high altitude and no light pollution, and it is something to be seen.
Kimberly, thanks so much for the suggestion. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Take care. Our number is 513-419-7100. Justin's calling from Owensville. Hi, Justin. What's your question?
Hi, I was just calling to see when the next time I can catch a meteor shower would be.
Oh, wow. We got one coming up. It's not very far away. Well, we're actually kind of in a meteor shower right now called the Taurids, which is a lesser meteor shower. But the big one is Leonids that Wes mentioned. It's going to be on the night of the 17th to the morning of the 18th. That's the peak. You can see it on any a couple days before and a couple days after. But the peak is going to be on the morning of the 18th. About 2 to 5 a.m. Oh, my gosh, another morning thing. It's ridiculous.
The middle of my morning, man. Middle of my morning.
You guys are morning astronomers. I don't know how you do it. But when Michael's up at 3 or 4 in the morning, that's the best time to do it. And we're not expecting a huge turnout from the Leonids this year, but maybe 10 to 15 an hour or something like that.
And if you're not a morning person and you want to do a meteor shower, there's also the Geminids coming up in December. I'm pretty sure that's December 13th, 14th. And so that one's actually visible before midnight. And so you have a better chance of seeing meteors and not having to get up at 5 or 6 in the morning.
All right. Thanks so much, Justin. We appreciate your call.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Tony's calling from Landon. Hi, Tony. What's your question?
My question is, where did the moon come from? I have read several theories, and I wondered if we think we know, and two, what we think it is, where it came from.
Well, there are some recent computer simulations that have been done that demonstrate that what could have happened was that something collided with the Earth. And so in this collision, you just don't have things smacking together, but you have things melting and vaporizing and then, you know, amalgamating, and just a lot of amazing physics and chemistry happening. And then with the rotation and the separation, you can get two bodies winding up out of a collision like that. So that's one theory as to how the moon might have gotten here.
And definitely the leading theory, because the evidence came back from the Apollo astronauts. When they brought the moon rocks back from the moon, they were a match for Earth rocks. So the moon was, it seems our leading evidence is pointing at the moon was part of the Earth at one point and broke off. And that's why we have such a large moon compared to our planet versus a lot of the other planets in the solar system.
Are the other moons much smaller?
Compared to their planet, their parent planet, they are much smaller. The only exception would be Pluto.
But Pluto, I was gonna, a planet or went, not a planet?
You, you
a
went
planet.
There.
It's
you
not
went there.
A planet, so it doesn't count. So we have the largest moon to planet ratio of any planet.
Is it Jupiter if it has all the moons, 6 moons or something?
Oh, it's got a whole host of moons. Jupiter's got like countless moons.
67 is
oh
the
my
latest,
gosh.
Is the latest.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, well, then.
And that's just officially named. I mean, really, there's probably thousands of objects that are in orbit around Jupiter. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Laura's calling from Covington. Hi, Laura. What's your question?
Hi. This Christmas, I'm actually going home to Wyoming. Perfect place for stargazing, as has already been mentioned. But I'm going to take my nephews out stargazing up in the mountains. And they're 5 and 6. And I was wondering if there were any smartphone apps or children's books that I could read to them or show them first to really get them into the idea.
Well, my favorite app is be Star Walk, because that's one where you can hold your phone up to the sky and it tells you what you're pointed at pretty much.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So you don't even need us anymore now that there's phones.
Right.
You just use the phone. It'll tell you what stars are up there, what objects are out there. And then the sky simulation software like Stellarium can get you a head start on what might be visible at that day. You can preview what the sky will be like and even preview what you're going to look at.
There's a website that I like to use, and it also has an app now. It's called Heavens Above. And so if you search your Google Store or whatever it is for Heavens Above, you should be able to find this app. But based on your location, one of the cool things that it can do is it can tell you when the International Space Station is passing overhead or just when other satellites are passing overhead. And so that's a great activity for kids because, you know, you can literally say, okay, the International Space Station is going to appear over there in 3 seconds, and bam, it does. And so that's a really cool thing
to
impress them.
Well, I think the space station is very cool just in general, and it goes around so quickly, and there it goes, and it's fast. And do you think just having that out there is getting more people looking at the sky?
I think it's really cool because with satellites, they have a unique appearance. They move fast, don't twinkle. It's so distinctive. And so you look up there in the sky and you go, wow, that's something we did. That's something people did.
And there are people up there.
Mm-hmm. Inside that, moving around that
that's
fast.
That's even more, yeah. Yeah. So I think it's incredibly cool. Yeah.
Laura, does that help?
Yeah, that was wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We certainly appreciate it. We're almost out of time, but let's talk a little bit more just about what at particular times of the year, you know, as we're heading into winter, do you have to look differently than you would look in the summer as the earth and farther away from the sun and all those sorts of things?
Well, the good news is with daylight savings time over, we are now into early darkness time, so we can start viewing the stars a lot earlier. And also, it's going to be dark, you know, a lot longer. So we're looking forward to the winter sky coming in. That's when you see some of these bright stars. 8 of the top 20 bright stars will be in one part of the sky with Orion that everybody recognizes. And I can't wait to see the Orion Nebula, which is this huge cloud of gas and dust that's in the constellation Orion that's making new stars. And we see it with our telescope, and it looks pretty awesome. So I can't wait for that this winter.
Michael?
Yeah. And there's also, I believe, the Ring Nebula in Lyra that's going to be out. And so it's it looks like it's a planetary nebula. It looks like a thin, faint smoke ring in the telescope. It's really beautiful, and you can find it in between two brighter stars in this like a diamond-shaped area. And I believe, 2,200 light years away, something like that. It's
very far, yeah. Mm-hmm. This is the remnants of a star dying, basically.
Yep. And Wes?
You have to have a dedicated observers in order to go out in the winter, but I think you're really rewarded. Even though in the Cincinnati area, sometimes winter is associated with a lot more clouds, at the same time, when it is clear, I think it's a lot more clear in the winter just because you don't have that mugginess that's associated with the summer. And so if you can get a clear night, those winter nights, they're cold, you know, but if you're dedicated and go out there, you'll be rewarded with a really clean, crisp sky.
All right. Well, thank you all for being here. It's been a very interesting conversation this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for joining us. My guests today were chair of the Northern Kentucky University Physics, Geology, and Engineering Department and manager of the NKU Schneider Observatory, Dr. Michael Roth, Thomas More College Assistant Professor of Math and Physics, Dr. Wes Ryle, who manages the BB&T Observatory at TMC, and Cincinnati Observatory Assistant Director and Outreach Astronomer and co-host of the popular PBS series Stargazers, Dean Regas. In just a moment, we'll hear how design can be used to solve social problems. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik.